thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
Our subject is giving up. Say it with me. Giving up. Say it with me. Come on up. Giving up is the title of our series of messages. It has three implications to it. Think about it for a moment with me. Giving up. In other words, I am worn out. I don't know where I'm going to go from here. I've been trying to make it work on my own, and I just give up. Here I am. So it has that implication. Second of all, I want to give up my life to God. I mean, that's what I really want to do. I don't want to play church. I don't want to play games. I don't want to fit into the crowd. I don't want to be politically correct. I want to give my life to God without any hesitation or reservation. I want to give my life to God. Jesus said, "Come unto me, all you that are weary and carry heavy burdens." He said, "I will give you rest." So he said, "I will give you rest." So give it up to God. And thirdly, we want to give up. In other words, we want to give of our tithes and our offerings to him. We're giving it up. It's the right thing to do. And I'm not going to be ashamed to do it. I'm not going to hold in reservation. I'm just going to give it up to God. So those three things keep in mind as we go through this. As I said, it is a talk about money, but it's talk about being free to do what God has called us to do. When you're not free with your finances, the opposite of that is you're in bondage. You're a slave to your finances, and rather than money being used for the purposes of God, you're being used by the money and by the debt we've accumulated in our life. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 7 says, "The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant or slave to the lender." Think about that just for a moment. The borrow, those who borrow money, become a slave to the lender. In other words, we're bound. It's a bondage, slave to the lender himself. We're strapped. We can't find a way out. It was if I walked out here on stage with a big ball, if you can imagine a bowling ball, hooked to a chain that's hooked to my ankle, and not only do I walk out on stage, but this is the way I go through life. This ball and chain constantly with me, and that becomes a worrisome thing. That chain rubs against the ankle. So today, let's title our message, "Giving Up My Ways for God's Ways." All right, so we're going to focus in on that. I want to give you about five principles, kind of an overview of things that are going to be ahead. We'll talk a little bit deeper about them. Giving up my ways for God's ways. Isaiah chapter 55 and verse 8 says that my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are my ways your ways, says the Lord. And I say, thank God, God doesn't think like us. Right? I mean, can you imagine if God thought like us? Wow, we'd be in a whole heap of trouble. He doesn't, though. His thoughts are higher. So what we want to do is we want to examine for the next 4 weeks, beginning today, what are God's thoughts on money? What are his words on money? Really, I want to hear from him. As much as I want to hear about the value of prayer in my life, or faith in my life, or hope in my life, I want to know about money. And as we get deeper into this, you realize that it is a bigger part of our life than we realize. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 20, talking about the wisdom of this world, it says, "Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolishness the wisdom of this world?" So God's thoughts are not only higher, but the wisdom of this world doesn't even compare to the way God is thinking. Matter of fact, it's foolishness. Put it on the level of foolishness when it comes to God's thoughts and his ways. Haggai chapter 1 and verse 5 and 7. Listen carefully to this verse. It says, "Consider your ways." Say that. Consider your ways. "You have sown much and bring in little. You eat, but you do not have enough." What's happening here? You drink, but you are not filled with drink. You clothe yourself, but you're not warm. Notice here. And he who earns wages to put into a bag with holes. You ever feel like that? You get your paycheck, you know, and where did it go? It's like it just went out holes. Consider your ways, the Bible says, when you think about these things. Now, obviously, Haggai is dealing with a problem. And I think I could get to the bottom line here. The bottom line problem is this, is that the people had their priorities mixed up. They had their priorities mixed up. Wow, this guy won't quit. Thus saith the Lord, consider your ways. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to consider our ways, our thoughts, and we want to get our priorities right. So, you ever feel like you're taking one step forward and go to, guy won't quit. Yeah, keep going. You ever feel strapped? Huh? I don't know where he's going with that one. But notice this. It's almost become the norm to have credit card payments. It's almost become the norm to have a student loan. Or it's become the norm to be fighting over money. So the norm has become something that's real bondage to each and every one of us. Excuse me a minute. Wow, it's just tough being bound up and strapped like this. Listen, the average household, listen to these stats. They're going to come up on the screen too. The average household, it gets worse every service. The average household, listen to this stat. The average household debt in the United States is 136% of the household income. Now, what that means is that people spend 36% more than they make. Now, that's average. You can't do that for very long, folks. And yet, we found ways to do it. If one credit card maxes out, guess what? Get another credit card. And another. How easy it is to get credit cards. I can't tell you how many I've thrown away. Last week, they come in. I don't even open them anymore. The average credit card debt is $14,517. The average consumer has 3.5 credit cards. Here's some good advice. Get rid of the three, keep the 0.5. The average 21-year-old has $12,000 in debt. By the time they're 28, it goes to $78,000 in debt. Average 28-year-old. One-third of Americans have debts sent to a collection agency. Staggering. 33.3% of Americans. If, rounded off, 300 million Americans, 100 million Americans have had debt go over to collection agencies. The average U.S. household lives from paycheck to paycheck, 55% of the homes. In other words, if you miss a paycheck, you can't pay your bills. So if you can't pay your bills because you missed a paycheck, guess what? You put it on a credit card and you get more debt. Something has to happen to free yourself from that. The number one cause of divorce, money. 95% of couples argue over money. That's not in my household. Average American has over $38,000 in consumer debt. $38,000. I mean, no wonder I'm strapped. Just reading these stats put me in bondage. People spend 12 to 18% more when using a credit card. 12 to 18% more. So the wisest things to do is what? Get rid of the credit card. You won't spend as much. won't have as much bondage in your life. And that's just one of the many things I think that we need to consider as we go through this. Now, does God have any thoughts about money? Absolutely. Matter of fact, they're freeing thoughts. Get this, 2/3 of the parables deal with money or possessions. I love the parables, but the more you read them, you find out that 2/3 of them are dealing with possessions or with money. 1 out of 10 verses in the Gospels deal directly with money. 2,300 verses in the Bible, 5 times more than what's spoken on prayer or faith is spoken on money. As much as we need faith, as much as we need prayer, as much as we need hope, there's more talked about in the Bible about money than anything else. Why? Because you see, if you get the money right, the faith and the prayer and the hope and the security and the rest and the peace, all that comes together if you get that right. So how we manage our money, will it be God-honoring or is it more man and selfish, self-honoring than that? Well, I believe there is some financial freedom. Now, Zach didn't believe, and he's right. I want some financial freedom, Zach. Financial freedom thoughts. Let me give you some financial freedom thoughts. Norman Vincent Peale said it this way: change your thoughts and you change your world. So I guess what we're going to try to do today, I'm glad that's off me. Anyway, and I tell you, any one of us would be glad it's off us. Once you're strapped and you know what it means to be bound, nothing like being free from that. So we need to change our thoughts. So rather than think like I normally think or what is popular, way the world thinks about finances, I want to begin to think the way God thinks about it. I want to give you 5 financial freedom thoughts, okay? Number 1, calling versus compensation. Calling versus compensation. At the end of the day, when it's all said and done, how much money you make does not satisfy or fulfill you. It's not the thing that fulfills you. What will fulfill you is knowing what God has called you to do. If you could get up every morning with this overriding thought on your mind and your heart, I feel called of God today, I'll tell you, there's a motivation in that. And it's what you're called to that matters. But here's what happens. We are so strapped that we can't really move in the direction that where we believe we're called to, because I can't afford to miss a paycheck, and I would like to miss a paycheck and get a different kind of job, but we live so strapped that we're bound that we can't make any moves to free ourselves up to find out what God has for us to do. Knowing your purpose, knowing what God has called you to, and then working that purpose in your life. The secret to your life is knowing what you're on this planet about. Not how much you accumulate. We don't just need money. Look at this. We don't just need money to live on. We need something to what? Live for. It's the difference between compensation and calling. It's something to live for. God, I want something to live for. I want something more rewarding in my life. Paul said it this way. When he's talking about doing something that counts, he said in the book of Acts, but none of these things move me, nor do I count my life dear to myself, so that I may finish my race with joy, walking in joy, and the ministry which I received from the Lord Jesus. Paul knew his life mission. He had received it from God, and he was going to walk it out. You say, well, he was an apostle. He was a man of God. He was, you know, this or that. Listen, every one of us are on mission. Every one of us have a ministry, and we're all called to something. I felt as much called when I was doing construction and involved in the church as I am today being full-time. I felt as much. I was called to do that for that period of time. And then in God's timing, moved me on from there. Let me give you the second one. Well, you have to always talk about when you talk about finances, contentment versus consumerism. Contentment versus consumerism. No doubt we live in a society where people just want more. I think it's gone beyond just keeping up with the Joneses. It's getting ahead of the Joneses. And we'll do anything we can to get ahead of our neighbors, get ahead of fellow workers or whoever it might be, even relatives, getting ahead of them. So we live with just wanting more, more, more. And it's been made so easy to do it. That's why the debt level, the credit card debt, has gone up consistently. We lost the value of contentment. The value of contentment. I think we all want to be content. There's none of us that don't want to be content, but we've lost the value of it, and it's getting us in trouble. Luke chapter 12 says, beware. Don't always be wishing for what you don't have, for real life and real living are not related to how rich we are. And I think people live in that wishing thing all the time, always wishing, always wanting more and more and more. And I think that we know this to be true. The happiest people are not necessarily the wealthiest people. You know where I find this when I go on missions trips? And you know, we have that opportunity here at the church all the time. I don't know how many we have going out this summer, but you ought to look into that because it'll change your life. It'll change your family. We call some of them vacation with a purpose, where you take your family on vacation and do something for the kingdom. It'll change your life. And you know why it changes your life? It's because who you're ministering to when you go out there. And Cheryl and I are getting ready to leave Friday, by the way. We ask for your prayer. We're going to Thailand, and we're going to minister with Ajay and Nancy in Thailand for about 10 days, a revival and a graduation and different churches that are there in the villages. But I know when I go this time, I'm going to look in the eyes. There are 90 girls in the orphanage that you helped build, and you keep going by your finances. But I'll look into the eyes, and I'll look at those kids playing in that courtyard or out in the street, and guess what? They're happy. They have a stick in the hand and a can or something, and they're just playing with that stick and can, and they're running bases with just kicking the ball around, and they're happy. They don't have all these electronic stuff. They don't have these phones and all this, but they're happy. They're content with what they have, because they're not caught in that being strapped financially, and that frees them up. It'll free you up. Paul said it this way. He said, I know. He said, I know what it is like to be in need, and I know what it's like to have plenty, and all of us have been there. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. He learned it. How did he learn it? You learn it through life's experiences. Hopefully, you learn that by wanting more and going after it and putting yourself in debt, that's not contentment. You haven't learned to be content. You have learned more to be discontent. But because that happened to you one time in your life, why let it happen again? Why not get out of it once and for all and begin to live the life that God's called you to live, free from that bondage? Here's the key to contentment. This is really, really simple. Realize I'm blessed. Chew on that for a while. Just realize you're blessed. So, God, I don't need more. Every time there's that push or that drive for you to have more, think about this. Pull back and say, God, I am a blessed person. Lord, what you've done for me in my life, Lord, if you don't do another thing, I am blessed. I am blessed with my relationship with you. I'm blessed with the family you've given me. I'm blessed with a good church that you've given me. Lord, I'm blessed in a good area to live. Lord, I am blessed. It's really a cure for discontentment. So contentment is not fulfillment of what you want, but the realization of what you already have. What you already have. And I tell you, we have so much more than other people have. And once again, I'll be reminded of that when I go to Thailand and those areas. If you never did anything else for me, content means to limit oneself. Say that with me, to limit oneself. I got to limit myself. Takes a little bit of work. Let me give you a third one. God-dependent versus independent. Oh, and how independent we are. Proverbs 18, verse 11 says, the wealth of the rich is their fortified city. Notice this. They imagine it a wall too high to scale. In other words, let me explain this verse. People that are so dependent on their wealth, the not only the income they have, but their savings account or their TSAs, whatever it is, that you come to a place where they actually imagine that there's not a problem they can't face because they're secure with their wealth. How ridiculous it is to feel that way. You don't know what your next breath is going to be. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You don't know what's going to happen to your economy or your family or things like that. And yet they realize people who live this way think or imagine their minds are going to get away with everything in this life. That's not where you find contentment. The highest percentage of givers is among poor people. Poor people give more in percentage than rich people do. Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 9, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Sound familiar from the Lord's Prayer? Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God. You're probably sitting there and saying, I would never come to the place where I would say, who is the Lord? And yet our lifestyle, our walk really is saying that all the time. Lord, I don't need you. We ignore him. We go about trying to do it independent of him. I will not trust in riches, but in him who richly provides. Ought to be our. This is one of my favorite verses in the Bible. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 7 and 10. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. Honor the Lord with your possessions, with the first fruits of all your increase. Now here's the result of this. When you honor the Lord and you're God-dependent and you honor him first, here's the result. Your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. 21st century, you're going to be blessed. God's going to bless you. He's going to make sure you have all that you need. Maybe not all that you want, but all that you need you will have in your life. Now this one here probably to me is, if you get this one, you'll get them all. Number four, stewardship versus ownership. What's the difference between stewardship and ownership? The Bible talks about being a good steward. It talks about being faithful. A steward is a manager, not an owner. A steward is a manager and not an owner. God owns everything and I'm his manager. You know what? That's so rewarding to me. I feel so secure in that God owns it all and I'm simply working for him. I've come into this relationship, but also partnership, where realizing God owns it all, and I just need to be careful, how do I manage all that God owns? How do I manage that? What's my responsibility? Because we do have a responsibility. I don't own it all. Now, let me be very clear. I'm not just talking about that 10% we call the tithe. Well, that belongs to the Lord. No, I'm talking about 100% belongs to God. Every part of your life belongs to him. Think about it for a moment. Without him, you can do nothing. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19, Jesus said it. He said, don't store up for yourselves treasure on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasure in heaven. You know, people have a hard time getting their mind wrapped around that because we're so now thinkers. We're so touchy-feely. We've got to see it. It's right now. We can't think ahead. And yet, when Jesus talked, anytime we get these principles, they're beyond what was going on here. It goes into eternity. How can I store up in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal? How do I do that? Listen, every time you do something for the kingdom, every time you invest in the kingdom, every time you, because you have your priorities right, you're giving to something that's advancing the kingdom, it's sending it on ahead. You can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. That's a reality. We ought to think in eternal ways. Matthew chapter 13, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure. It's hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and with joy, in his joy, went and sold all that he had, and he bought that field. Why? He found something precious. And when you find a truth that's precious or something precious, you give up everything else to go after that one truth. Here's a sad, sad parable. Luke chapter 12, Jesus talked about The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. He was blessed. And he thought, say thought, within himself, he began to think within himself, independent of God, he was thinking within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I'll pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, be merry. But God said to him, here's the sad part, fool, foolish thinking, ridiculous thinking. This night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. How foolish it is to think that we own it, that God's blessings for us just to store up, pull down old barns, build bigger barns, get a bigger account. Listen, did you ever think of this? First of all, God wants to bless you, but the reason he wants to bless you is that you'll bless other people. So when you get what you call a windfall in, that windfall is not necessarily given to you by God for your own purposes. Now, God takes care of us, but do you ever think, and we should start thinking, God, what are your thoughts on this that you just gave me? Now, you gave it to me for a reason. What do you want me to do with it? Man, that's a whole new way of living, folks. That's living God-dependent. That's living as a steward. That's living according to God's principle. I guarantee when you begin to live according to these principles, you're going to be free. You're going to be free. The value of life is so important. Let me give you the last one. Generosity versus misery, or let me say misery. That's where we get misery from, miser. And, you know, if you're a miser, you're a miserable person. Jesus, Acts chapter 20 and verse 35, it is more blessed to give than it is to receive. Have you learned that yet? Every time you give, there's a joy that comes to your heart. Remember it so that you can give. The value of my life isn't determined by how much I achieve or accumulate, but by how much of my life I give away. 1 Timothy chapter 6, again, it says, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, or to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up for themselves as a firm foundation. Notice this, for the coming age. So not only are you blessing someone here and doing good and doing what is right and representing God here, but there's a foundation being built for the coming age that you set in motion for yourself, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Let me say this, God's ways work.
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.